This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan is away this week. Pushing against the boundaries is a time-honored tradition of adolescence, but in contemporary society, the risks seem greater. Almost every week, there's some new report or event about teens in trouble for taking drugs, for drinking, for having sex. And more, the experts tell us the best way to protect our children from the dangers of adolescence is deceptively simple. Spend more time with them. Talk to them. But parents of teens will tell you that's easier said than done. Teenagers have few inhibitions about letting their parents know that they don't want to be with them. They don't want to share their innermost thoughts, and they'd much rather go to the mall than sit down for a family meal. The experience is repeated over and over again. Parents despair as their delightful preteen withdraws into a sulky, impenetrable silence during the teenage years. Do you have a sulky teen you can't talk to? Are you wondering how you're going to get through the teen years? Are you a teenager whose parents won't leave you in peace, or do you really wish they would make more of an effort to spend time with you? And is anybody out there doing it just right? We'd love to hear from all of you. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Living with teens is the topic today on Talk of the Nation. And joining us here in Studio 3A is Laura Sessions Stepp, a Washington Post reporter, and also author of Our Last Best Shot, Guiding Our Children Through Early Adolescence. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Lynn.
Let's start out with the name of your book, Our Last Best Shot. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's not our last shot at helping our kids become great adults, but it's our last best shot because of the biology of the young adolescent. Their brains are growing at a remarkable rate, second to infancy. They're heading out into the world, as you intimated in your beginning there, into parts of the world that we don't know. We no longer control them in the way that we did when they were young. So we have to find ways of helping them cope with the world just as their mind is expanding. And so it's a real golden moment, if you will, in parenting to kind of flip the switch and get them to go out on their own in a healthy, safe way.
You know, I have heard more than one parent of teenagers say, I can't really do anything about controlling them anymore. They're really their own person at this point.
And isn't that wonderful? That's what I would say to them. We want them to be their own person, but in the end, but we want to help them get there safely. And what I would say to those parents is, in fact, you have to replace control with communication. Yes, indeed, you can't be with your eighth or ninth grader every single minute, but you can find ways to talk to your kid, to listen to them, to pay attention to their world, to pay attention to their friends, to figure out what they like to do, to listen to their music. You can move, as you move to the edge of their lives, you can still stay in their center if you know how to do that.
You know, I myself do not have a teenager yet, but I've had relationships with kids who became teenagers, and in more than one case, I have seen that phenomenon of this kid that you had a great relationship with, was just charming, funny, cute, suddenly just become this other person that you really don't know how to talk to. And that's, I think,
right,
the problem that so many parents face. They really, it's all well and good to say talk to them, but how?
Well, you don't, first of all, you don't lecture them. I think parents, you know, we often treat our kids as employees. We think that they should listen to what we say. We sit down at family dinner, expect to go through an agenda and get through and get all our business done in 30 minutes and go on. Kids at this age are, and throughout the adolescent years really, are much more going in all directions. That's partly biological. It's partly the way they're wired to go. And so we have to make ourselves available to listen to them when they want to talk and not necessarily when we want to talk to them. We have to, listening, I'm increasingly convinced, is the most important thing we do rather than talk. And for someone who's a talker like myself, I'll tell you that did not come easily. Listening, watching, observing, all of those things are much more important than actually talking to your child, because talking to them at this age sounds like you're lecturing.
Mm-hmm. There's some conventional wisdom out there right now, or there's a message that I think is being pushed in a number of quarters that you may think your kids don't want to hear you, but they really do. Convince me of that.
In 2 minutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can only tell you that as I did the research for my book, and I lived with the families of 12 kids for a year, and I got to know them pretty well. And I would often be talking to kids, and we wouldn't be talking about their parents at all. And they would say, well, you know, my mom always says such and such, or what my dad did yesterday? They brought up mom and dad all the time, even when I didn't want to talk about mom and dad. So what that said to me was, mom and dad are very important. They're paying more attention to us as parents than they will even admit to us.
What are some, then you're saying that's sort of an assumption, we make this assumption that kids don't want to listen to us.
Yeah, we assume, and they will. I'm not saying they can't act like really badly at times, and they'll, go up the stairs and slam the door, and I don't want to talk to you for a week. You bake their favorite cookies, or you start listening to, Nora Jones, and your daughter happens to like Nora Jones, or you do something that sort of brings them very gently back into the circle and says, hey, look, I want to be a part of your life. I don't want to be a spy, but I want to be a friend. And they will respond to that. Now, I use the word friend carefully, because we still have to set boundaries, and we still have to have rules that they understand. And one of my favorite phrases is that we are the guardrails for adolescents, that they're going to go all over the road, but it's our job to make sure they don't go off the cliff.
If we're making an incorrect assumption and assuming that kids don't really want to listen to us, don't really want to hear what we have to say, don't really want to talk to us, what are some of the other assumptions we may be making that are incorrect?
We assume as soon as they start talking back to us, or they start talking about so-and-so who has pink hair and earrings, that they're going to get into the drug culture. They're going to start drinking. They're going to have sex at 15. And all of those things that the media, and I'm part of the media, I have to say, we write about the problems that adolescents face, as we should. However, the assumption we make is that all adolescents are going to act like that, or that it's irrevocable, or that if they try something once, they're going to become an addict. None of that is true. In fact, the proportion of kids who are seriously in trouble is the same as the proportion of adults who get seriously in trouble. It's about 1 out of 5. So for most kids, for 4 out of 5 kids, adolescence is a safe and necessary passage into adulthood.
It's not an easy time.
No, it's not an easy time. But it's also, the same things that drive us crazy are also kind of wonderful if you can think about it. Think about the kid who's an incredible liar. You don't want him to lie. That's one of the, trust is important. But that same child may be one of the most creative, imaginative people that you know, making up stories to you, but also making up good stories at school. So it's really two sides of the same coin. You have to be careful, but you also have to explore that side of them. Or let's take the girl who's just bossy, and you think, boy, what a mouth she has on her. Well, maybe she has real leadership qualities that need to be channeled into some kind of organization where she can run for president. You see what I'm saying?
It's a glass half full philosophy.
And too often we look at the half empty glass, and instead of saying what is isolating that characteristic of the child that's driving us nuts and saying, well, what are the good things about this? How could I channel this in a good and positive way?
What about raging hormones? We hear all the time about the raging hormones of teenagers.
Well, sure, they're biologically they're changing dramatically. And but in fact, and yes, they do have emotional ups and downs. But in fact, a large part of what you see in terms of adolescent behavior is a reaction to their environment and their reaction to our reaction, their reaction to their friends, their reaction to their teachers. Regardless of their hormones, it's a reaction to this new world that they've gone at it and how people respond to them.
We're talking about living with teens on Talk of the Nation. The number is 1-800-989-8255. And let's take a call from Gary in Cleveland. Hi, Gary.
Hi. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
Good. I have 4 teens between the ages of 16 and, well, I guess you should say almost teen and 12. And I'm in a second marriage. I have boy girl, as far as the boys are my wives and the girls are mine, and I found that you just have to not necessarily have specific times to talk with your kids, that it's got to come natural. With regards to my daughters, I was been separated from their mother for a very long period of time, and we used the rides in the cars as a great time to talk, how's school, how's thing going. You can't decide that at when your child turns 13 or 14 that all of a sudden you're going to be an involved parent and you're going to want to know what's going on. You've got to be there from day one, and you've got to be knowing what's going on. And I've developed a relationship with my kids and my daughters especially, where they know what is expected. They, when they're going to go out, and especially my my 15-year-old daughter, when she's going to go out, she knows that she has to tell me who she's going with, when she's going to be home, what the event is that she's going for, why she's going over a certain person's house, where she knows the person. And so it's not a, it's never a me trying to pry the information out. She willingly gives it to me because we've developed that sort of relationship. The other thing I want to say is, as far as, again, talking, is that, and the times to talk is, I find a great time is right before my daughters go to bed, and I go into their bedroom, and, I mean, it used to be I read stories. Well, they're too old to read stories to, but we just sit, and I first sit on their, they both share a bedroom, and I sit on one's bed, and I talk to, and I caress, and I hug, and I talk to them as far as what's going on and everything okay in school and this and that, and then I go to the other one, and even my 15-year-old, I hug her, I kiss her, and I think that that's also very important. I don't know with boys so much, but I found it being a man with the girls, it's much easier just to have that tactile relationship also with a child, as well as just talking to them.
Thanks for your call, Gary, and let's hear what Laura.
Well, I think Gary raises a good point and emphasizes what I said earlier, that you don't talk to kids by sitting down and saying, okay, now we're going to have a talk. Tell me what you did in school today. One of the best ways to do that is to open them up, is to play with them. We often forget to have fun and play with our kids as we did when they were younger. So you play tennis together. You take up golf. Whatever activity you want to do, doing side by side with them, the little things will come out.
Yeah, I mean, I think what Gary brought up is the corollary to talking, listening to your kids is making time.
Right, right. You've got to make time, and that the parents who were most successful in my book were those who sacrificed. They didn't go out with their friends as much. Some of them worked part time instead of full time. Dads and moms took turns being at home every night or every afternoon. They sacrificed in some cases financially in order to have more time with their kids.
Well, let me ask you this: how is that different from the time that you make for? How is it different to make time for a teenager than it is to make time for a toddler or a younger child, a 10-year-old? You know, I mean,
with a teenager, you're just sort of around. I mean, unless you have specific activities you do, like every Wednesday night we go out to a movie, or every Saturday morning we go to IHOP for pancakes. I mean, you can schedule things with them that they like to do. That's very important. But also just to sort of be hanging out. And so it, in some ways it's as structured as with a younger child, and sometimes it's not structured at all. They just like your simple presence around the house.
Even if
they don't spend any time with you in the house, they like knowing you're there.
You got to hang out even if they don't want to be with you, huh? Wait for them to want to be with you. So it's not a time to get your social life kicking off again.
No, in fact, I advise, parents are very busy today, and they say, we have no time for this. I say, make time. Find something else you can put off for a couple of years.
We're talking about parents living with teens living with parents. Call us with your experiences. Are you able to talk to your teen? Does your teen listen? Give us a call, 800-989-TALK. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We're talking about how parents can understand and support their kids during the turbulent teen years. How do you and your teen communicate? Do they want you around in their life? How involved are you able to be? And how do you strike the right balance? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. You can also send email to totn@npr.org. Our guest is Laura Sessions-Stepp, a Washington Post reporter and author of Our Last Best Shot, Guiding Our Children Through Early Adolescence. And let's take a call now from Deb in Hudson, Ohio. Hi, Deb. Deb?
Hi. Hello?
Go ahead.
Sure. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling. I have a 15-year-old daughter who progressively has kind of withdrawn in the last couple years. This is, you know, not a new thing. I think we have a decent relationship. You know, she does well in school. She's not overly rebellious. But they kind of say, you know, just let the kids go and they'll come back to you. I'm just concerned because I don't really feel like I'm her friend, like she talks to her friends. And I want to make sure, is that just going to happen, or do you have to be really intentional? Like, do you have to plan things? And what if they don't want to go on those activities you were talking about? Do you force them? You know, go on family vacations? That's pretty much my question. Will they come back to you?
Yes, they will. I could give you, there's a chapter in my book called about Chandler, who was, when I met her, she was literally fighting with her, physically fighting her mother. She was sent to an institution for 4 months. Chandler and her mom now, about 3 years later, work in the same office. Chandler has had a baby, and her mom is helping her raise it. That's not necessarily what you may want for your daughter, but the point is that they have a very close relationship. But I do think, I mean, you give them choices of what you want to do. Say, you know, I'd like to do something special with you this week. What would you like it to be? You know, and it could be anything. It could be going shopping. It could be going to a movie. It could be, you know, whatever it is that they want.
How about this? Like, you know, she's kind of chosen, yeah, we'll go to a play. And then something comes up and she comes home and says, oh, I really want to go to a party with my friends. And, you know, I kind of let her off the hook. And I feel sad, you know, that she's choosing.
Right.
Do you ever insist and say, no, this is really special time and I made this commitment with us? And
I think you are absolutely, you can absolutely do that. I mean, not every time, but I think she needs to hear from you how important it is that you be with her. And, you know, you have to kind of play that by ear. Sometimes you'll say, oh, okay. But let me tell you, I don't want to minimize the pain here, because believe me, I raised a boy who didn't talk to me very much. And, you know, I can't think of anyone I love more. And it hurts when they pull away like that. It's like, you know, you put a, you know, knife through your heart sometimes.
Exactly.
But believe me, the most important thing to remember is how much they do love you. And I cannot stress to you, the kids will never say that. My son would not tell you that in a heartbeat if he were here. But I know he does, and the way he's turned out has shown me that he does, and that he's a fine young man, and I'm sure your daughter will be a good young woman. But it does hurt, and I want to acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, thank you, and, you know, it just gives hope to hear these kind of things.
Thanks so much for your call, Deb.
Okay, thank you.
Let's go now to a parent who made what some might consider to be an unusual decision. He and his wife decided that he would stay home full-time to care for their kids as the kids were entering their teen years. Joining us on the phone from his home in Alexandria, Virginia, is Mike Stillwell. Hi, Mike.
Hi there. How are you doing?
I'm good. First of all, how old are your kids?
I have a son who will be 17 in 2 weeks. I have a daughter who will be 14, who is 14, and then our youngest is 6 years old. She's my youngest daughter.
Now, how did you and your wife arrive at this decision that you would stay home with your teenagers?
Well, it was mainly for stress relief. When the kids started getting, my older two children started getting older, life just got to be so hectic. And plus, my wife at the time had traveled a lot for her job, and it just got to be so stressful with, you know, arranging play dates and sports activities and after school activities, and then when our youngest was born, you know, bringing up an infant, it just got to be, you know, too stressful. So it was mainly for a stress relief for the whole family.
Did it require some sacrifice on your part, just in terms of loss of pay, those kinds of things?
Yes, it did. I mean, most of my salary at the time went to paying child care and all vacations and a few extra odd and ends. So we, for a couple of years, we had to scale back some vacations or not take vacations at all. But then we had to slowly, you know, work things into our budget. It did take a little bit of sacrifice at first, but it has worked out through promotion and making some changes. It's helped out greatly.
Now, did you time this specifically to be at home also because your kids were going into the teenage years and you thought this was a good time to be with kids?
Yes, we did. When our two older kids were always in daycare, we were both working parents early on, and as the children got older, we could see that they were actually requiring more of our time than we had originally thought. Usually the common thought is, once you get a children raised and out of diapers and potty trained and off to school and you're pretty much done. But it's really not the case. The teenagers really need a lot of help and guidance as they go through their formative years. And their job is to push the limits and our job is to set the limits. So we really felt that it was important to have someone home and be here after school when they got here and ask questions for them and be here on their time.
It's interesting because what we've heard people say is in order to sort of keep the lines of communication open with teenagers, you need to sort of make that time for them so that it can happen when they're ready for it to happen, not to sort of have a date for a conversation.
Exactly.
Have you found that has worked out for you, being there more?
Absolutely. You have to be there on their time. You have to be ready and willing to talk to them and listen to them when they're ready to talk. You can't say, okay, at 4:30 I'll be ready to talk to you, or 8:30 this evening I'll be ready to sit down and have a talk with you. Those kind of things don't work. They'll usually tune you out. I'm just constantly amazed at the amount of information I get in the first hour that they come home from school every day. Sometimes I get more information in that first hour than I get all day. So you have to be there and ready to listen to them when they're ready.
How's this affecting your wife? Do they talk to you more? Does she feel a little left out, or does she think it's a good thing? Or
not at all. It's been a very good thing. They have things that they talk to me about, and they have things that they talk to my wife about. And each of them have their own little quiet time with my wife, either in the evenings or on the weekends. And we laugh about it because we'll compare notes that my daughter will tell my wife something that she hadn't told me, and vice versa. And it's quite interesting how they just pick and choose the topics they wish to discuss with either parent.
I want to read an email from Eric in San Diego, and both of you can perhaps react to this. Eric says, the idea of spending time with your kids and doing things with them and appreciating their music sounds awfully like indulgence. Indulgence seems like one of the sources for many of the kids' problems these days. If kids do silly things, why should a parent participate? Laura Session Step?
Gee, thanks. the writer has a point in that I think parents can't just play and do fun things with their kids. The kids also need some sort of responsibility and sense of being a part of the family in a serious way. I'm a big believer in jobs from a very early age. I'm a big believer in work, increasing the responsibility they have, and not beyond their room to, building a bookcase, painting the fence, walking the neighbor's dog, washing the car, not necessarily for their allowance, but just doing it because that's what we do as a family. So I think you do both. I think you maybe indulge them a little bit, but I think you also expect a lot for that.
Mike Stillwell, what's your reaction to that?
I would agree with that little statement Laura made. You have to certainly give them a certain amount of your time and indulgence, but you do set limits where they have responsibilities that are just family obligations that they have to do. An example, this past snowfall that we had, I took both my son and older daughter up to their grandparents' house to shovel out their walk so that they can get to and from where they have to go. And but like riding around the car, taking my daughter to her sports practice, she wants to listen to some pretty wild music, and with the girls in the carpool that we're with, I'll let them listen to a couple of really wild songs that I particularly don't care for, and then the rest of them have to be something that we both agree on. So you have to balance it between indulging them and setting some limits, but you can't completely and totally shut them off and make them, toe the line all the time. Otherwise, you'll have some very unhappy teenagers.
Mike, before I let you go, I have to ask, is it problem-free? Do you have no difficulties with your teenagers because you're spending
so
much time with them?
No, not at all. That's not the case at all. There are certainly some very bad days where we can't do anything right and we are certainly holding them back. We just had a conversation last night with my son. He wants an ATM card. We've been breaking him into a banking account, a checking account, and giving him responsibility with money, and he wants an ATM card, and that's one thing we held the line on that we want. We must have had a 25-minute conversation last night of, oh, come on, you can't you have it? No. Yes, I got to have it. Everybody's got one. No, I'm sorry, you're not ready to have one yet. You have to show us a little bit more responsibility. Oh, come on, you always say that. So, no, it's definitely not always a good time.
All right. Well, thanks so much for being with us, Mike.
Thank you for having me on.
Mike Stilwell spoke to us from his home in Alexandria, Virginia. And we are talking about living with teenagers, learning to listen and talk with teenagers on Talk the Nation. The number is 800-989-8255. And let's go to caller Rochelle in New York. Hi, Rochelle.
Hi. I believe, my husband also, that you should never take for granted the power of the pen. And when the environment was too heated and nobody was getting anywhere, my big thing is to sit down, well, was to, because the boys are grown, but even our college-age student gets a letter now and then. We would sit down and write our thoughts on a paper, and when our boys were ready to talk, the air was cooler, there was less static. They weren't angry letters where we were accusatory or mean. They were just our thoughts. And our oldest son at one time said, you got to stop sending those letters. Sometimes they make me cry. In other words, just pouring out your heart. I love you so much, and we only want the best.
Laura Session Step, is that a good idea, do you think?
I think it's an excellent idea. You know, my son learned to do that himself when we would say, well, you know, we really don't want you to have this new CD or whatever it was he wanted at the time. He would sit down and write us a memo on all the reasons that he needed it and make his case. And basically, you know, he should be a lawyer. He presented us with these documents that we had to consider. and it takes some of the emotion out of it when you're looking at a piece of paper and you're going. It also helps them, I think, analyze their thoughts, and it helps you sort of analyze your thoughts if you're the one writing. And I think it's a great idea.
Is there any danger to committing yourself to pen and paper? I mean, committing your thoughts in case later on
you're asking a writer this? No.
Okay, Rochelle.
May I just make one more comment?
Sure, go ahead.
I also believe, and it took, you know, years of therapy and reading all kinds of children's books, that no matter how much you disliked what they were saying or what their demands were, I practice saying, I hear what you're saying, I know what you want, I don't agree, but I respect what you're saying. As long as they weren't, you know, saying horrible things to us, you know, swearing or anything. But acknowledging that where they were coming from was appropriate for them, but that we did not agree, and that we were at an impasse and would have to be worked out. But always acknowledging that they were a person.
Yeah, the family is an incredible opportunity for our kids to learn negotiating skills. And, you know, currently I think some of our political leaders could have learned those things better. But we need to help our kids learn how to disagree, and the family is a way in which to do that. And this caller has offered us a way of helping to sort of frame it by writing it down.
Thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
Laura Session Step is the author of Our Last Best Shot, Guiding Our Children Through Early Adolescence. We're discussing what it takes to live with teenagers, how to talk with them, how to make time for them. If you'd like to join our discussion, give us a call at 1-800-989-8255, or you can email us at totn@npr.org. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Probably one of the most difficult topics for parents to talk about with their kids after sex is drug use. There have been a lot of ads over the years, including the famous This Is Your Brain on Drugs ad, warning kids about the dangers of drugs. Now there are new ads that are aimed at parents. Let's listen to one.
Okay, I'm at the age where it seems like I hate my parents, but when they say,
we want to know who's going to be there,
and I say, leave me alone! I don't really mean it. Without parental supervision, I'm much more likely to smoke pot and stuff. So when they say,
we need to know,
and I say,
none of your business,
I'm really hoping my parents don't try to act like my friends. What I really need is parents.
Talk, know, ask. Parents, the anti-drug. For more information, call 1-800-788-2800. Sponsored by the ONDCP in partnership for Drug-Free America.
Joining us now is Alan Levitt, director of the National Youth Anti-Drug Media Campaign at the White House National Drug Policy Office. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you for having me.
Now, this ad is called Don't Get Off My Case. What were you going for here with this message?
Well, that's part of a number of ads we have toward parents in what we call our parent efficacy monitoring message platform. It sounds kind of scientific, but it is basically trying to model three things. One, that parents are going to get a lot of pushback from kids, and that it shows them what they need to do, set limits. What time are you going to come home? I don't know. I don't remember the specific ad, but we have television ads and print ads that are very similar. So it models what parents need to do. It shows kids pushing back, and it also empowers parents because it works. It tells parents it's worth facing the struggle or the challenge they're going to have of their kids' pushback.
Yeah, what's sort of the genesis of this campaign, this idea that parents are the anti-drug?
Well, the public health community and the research shows that parents are the single key factor, if you have to choose one, that would affect their teens' drug use. This is a campaign aimed at teens, mostly 14 to 16-year-olds. And parents, especially when their kids get into middle school, when they become a teenager up to high school, that's when parents are faced with this enormous pushback from kids.
Mm-hmm.
And they step back. Many parents, not all of them, but many of them step back. And instead of asserting what their values are and continue to monitor their kids, they are lax, and that's where some problems happen.
Yeah. How is this ad and the message in this ad, how is it different from ones that you've done in the past or that have been done in the past?
Well, we've evolved our strategies. It started with talking to your kids, and then it became more be involved with their life. And as the more research that we did, and those are very important things, but the more research that we did, one parent expert named Tony Biglin at the Oregon Research Institute actually looked at different types of parenting skills and found that parent monitoring of kids' behavior, knowing who their friends are, establishing rules and expectations, and knowing where they are after school, that was the single greatest factor in affecting a kid's drug use behavior.
Do you find that parents ever misinterpret the message that you're trying to convey?
Some parents may. There's no one size fits all. We have different ads for certain immigrant of audiences, which don't have the same. They're not the same issues as the general population. Certain ones, for example, Asian immigrants or Hispanic immigrants, we might not use monitoring. It might be another kind of strategy. But we find that at least when we do research with kids, that of all the consequences of using drug use, the one that is the most affecting for kids is disappointing their parents.
Hmm. Well, thanks so much for joining us today.
Sure.
Alan Levitt is director of the National Youth Anti-Drug Media Campaign at the White House National Drug Policy Office. He spoke to us from his office in Washington. We have to take a short break right now. When we come back, we'll continue talking about how parents and kids can survive the turbulent teen years. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today, we're talking about living with teenagers, and if you're a teenager, living with your parents. Our guest is Laura Sessions-Stepp, author of Our Last Best Shot, Guiding Our Children Through Early Adolescence. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. Laura, there's an email here that refers back to our earlier guest, the father who was staying home from work so that he could spend more time with his teenagers. And this email is from Brenda. She says, this is a great idea, but not everyone has a vacation to cut out or someone else to depend on for income. How does a parent that has to work 60 to 70 hours to make ends meet or single parents accomplish this end? This sounds like an upper middle class ideal not available for the average family.
Well, that's a good question. A lot of people are in that category. And the word that comes to mind is what Alan Levitt said about monitoring. You set up a system whereby you know where your kid is and you have them call you when they get home. If they're going somewhere, you make sure you know where that is. You talk to the parents of the house where they're going to be. You look over their homework when you get home at night and just see what they're studying. You don't have to grade their papers or anything like that, but just get a a glimpse of what they're studying, so you can ask them at a phone call during the day, how'd your math test go? It's not so much, the research shows it's not so much the amount of time that you spend with your child. The good news is it's the attentiveness that you do show when you are talking to your child, so that you do kind of stay in touch with what they're doing, even when you're at work.
Okay, let's take a call, Margaret from Macon, Georgia. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. I'm a marriage and family therapist, and I do quite a bit of work with adolescents and their families. And I've also raised two adolescent daughters and am in the process of raising a four-year-old son right now. But one...
And there he is.
He can hear. Yes. Sorry.
On cue.
It was... excuse me. It was my... It's when I've worked with families, I've noticed.
Margaret?
Yes, sorry. He's been waiting a long time.
Okay.
Sorry. Adolescence is a transition, and each transition that families make is difficult. And I've noticed with the families that I've worked with that that transition is one of the hardest for them. And I think it's because parents are really looking for their children to act like they did when they were 8 and 9 years old, and that's just not gonna, you know, that's not where their kids are right then. And so I guess in listening to the comments that other people have made, it sounds like to me, if you can accept where they are while helping them grow to where they need to be, mature adults, then that's about the best parents can give.
All right, Margaret, I'm gonna let you attend to that younger child that you
Thank
have there
you
right
very
now.
Much.
And
Thank you.
See if Laura Sessions' step can respond. Thanks.
One thing we don't talk enough about is the grief that parents go through when their kids go into adolescence. I often think that the hostility that develops between parent and adolescent is partly a result of the parent's own grieving for that little boy or little girl for whom you were everything. And one of your earlier callers, that was very close to her with her 15-year-old daughter. So, you know, I think we need to acknowledge that that is there. We need to talk to friends about it. We need to talk to a spouse if we have a spouse. We need to seek support for ourselves and to somehow realize that this is the way things are. This is the new reality. It like so many things in our lives right now, there are things we don't like, but that's the reality, and we do have to say, yes, it's sad, it's hard, but that's the way it is, and I'm going to make the best of it.
Okay, Julie in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Julie.
Hello. This is a wonderful topic. Thank you for covering this today.
You're welcome.
I have a 13-year-old son, and I think things are going very well with him. Of course, you know, we have a few years to develop some additional problems, but I have friends who are seeming to have a lot more difficulty with their teenage daughters than I'm hearing of people having with their sons, and I wondered if you noticed any gender differences when you were doing the study.
Well, mothers and daughters... that's like oil and water, especially first daughters. Yes, there is research that shows that that is the hardest relationship there is. It's harder than fathers and sons for some reason. Mothers and sons typically have pretty good relationships, and that's, you know, I was blessed that way. But the mother-daughter, if the mother-daughter combination can make it through the adolescent years, and most of them do, what they then gain on the end of that is a closer relationship with another woman. Whereas with the mother and son, what happens is the son goes off, probably gets married, he develops his own life with another woman, and the mother is now out of the picture.
Right. That's probably where I'll suffer the loss.
I hate to tell you that, and I'm sure you've thought of it, but that's kind of the way it develops.
Right. I have a sister who has two teenage daughters, and she has said that she believes the difference is that the daughter is always figuring out how she would be doing it differently if she were the mother. And I don't believe that my sons ever consider that. I don't know if that's related.
Thanks for your call, Julie.
Sure, thank you.
Here's an email from Sean. He says, is there any data on which group is more influential on a teenager's behavior, parents or peers?
Oh, yeah. The data is very strong on that. Parents are far more influential on values and the kind of character that develops and the kind of appreciation for education. Peers are more influential on dress and music and slang. Now, there's a lot of crossover here, obviously, but in terms of the solid character development of the child, parents are far more influential in the long run. And that's one reason. And one of the things we haven't talked about here is the parents' own behavior and their modeling of that behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Because believe me, if you step out of line, if you've given your child one rule and you do something else, they're going to be the first to call you on it. And so during those teen years, as adults, we have to be very careful how we behave.
Yeah. Well, that's true all the way through.
It is. But it is true. But particularly as they go into the teen years, their brains literally become like sponges. They soak up so much more information than they did prior to the teen years that everything, literally everything they see around them becomes part of their world.
Well, one other thing in terms of people sort of dealing with teenagers is, can't we remember what we were like when we were teenagers, and wouldn't that help us a bit?
You would think, although a lot of people talk about teenagers, say, oh my God, I never want to be a teenager again. You know, and so they have these negative memories of being a teenager, and they don't want to carry that into the battle at home. Personally, I found it a lot of fun as a teenager, and I enjoyed sort of reliving my adolescence with my son. And some, you know, I enjoyed his music. The parents, I think, who can open themselves up to being a child again, if you will, to remembering what it's like to fall in love for the first time, what it's like to wonder whether there's a God, all those wonderful matters that are really at the heart of what life is all about. That's what we're exploring in the adolescent years. If we can watch our child as they explore those things, we get to experience that again for ourselves.
What would be the one most important piece of advice that you would give? We've been talking a lot about spending time and talking to kids, but in terms of facilitating all that, what would you say is the one thing you could leave people with?
This is going to sound perhaps out of tune with the world the way it is right now, but I would say relax a little. There are an awful lot of rules that parents put on themselves, they put on their kids, and they forget to relax and just watch and enjoy.
How do you relax when someone's in your face?
Huh? I have to tell you, they're not in your face all the time. In fact, they're not in your face most of the time. Most of the time with adolescents can be a real lark if you learn to relax and just pay attention.
All right. Thanks so much, Laura.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Laura Sessions-Stepp is a Washington Post reporter and author of Our Last Best Shot, Guiding Our Children Through Early Adolescence. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.